Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
What are you going to eat for lunch today?
You know, I haven't thought that far.
Oh, really?
That's how hungry I am.
Wow.
I mean,
What do you mean? That's how hungry you are? And yeah. You don't know what you want to eat?
No, I think I'm past the point of eating.
Oh, you're just going to find some
kind of... I think I'm just going to have coffee.
...food stuff and shove it into your face.
That would be great.
Oh, look at that.
How do you feel about that?
I like that.
Would you
I am hungry right now. I will go to lunch with you.
Okay, so, like, let's go get some teriyaki then.
All right, let's wrap this business
up.
All
right, well, see you guys. Here comes the episode.
Bye. Alright, it's season 3, episode 38, Podcast for Good. You know it.
Yeah.
Get it.
I just feel like, we need to like have a soundboard in here.
Oh, yeah.
So then like we can add sound.
That we make.
That we make while we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I mean, I think that would just be fun.
We also have to,
Like, wah, wah, wah. Yeah, will be another one.
Yeah. I think we also have to keep in mind that we're continuously coming up with sweet new band names.
Yeah.
I am keeping a list.
I know.
I really want to fill that out.
I really want you to fulfill your dreams.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for supporting me.
You are 100% supported.
Awesome. So today we're talking, it's, you know, not exactly a lighthearted topic, but war and conflicts.
Yeah.
Okay. We did an interview with Joe DiCarlo. He is the global ambassador for Medical Teams International. Right. For those of you who came to our leadership breakfast this year, you may remember Rachel Chaliakova spoke at the leadership breakfast about her experiences with Medical Teams International and the work that she does, which is really heavily based on healthcare and refugees. Mm-hmm. So
that are actually refugees from war and conflicted areas.
Exactly.
Throughout multiple countries in Africa.
Yes. So that is part of what ties Medical Teams International to this topic is war and conflicts, because that is the population they're really, really serving.
They really do serve the most vulnerable
people. They do. Yeah. And it's always mind-blowing to me how heartless people are when it comes to refugees, because if there was a war that broke out right here in the middle of Washington State and we couldn't go home because it was unsafe, we would be refugees. So then what?
Yeah.
Would we be viewed as like, as the same kind of like money grubbing or like asylum seeking, like trying to plant ourselves into this other country and and like force our culture onto people? Like, would we be seen that way?
I mean, I don't know, because I think it's unfortunate, because I think that it's dependent on person, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that you or I think of individuals that way that are seeking refuge. I mean, these people love their country and their
and they
homes,
want to be home.
And I think that this is a tough topic because people look at things changing in our world and our global conflicts as something. It's something that I think that people are in fear.
Yeah.
In a way, because we have so much connection throughout internet and knowing what's going on throughout the world, I think, and sometimes people turn to go to look smaller and to try and be simpler so they can control the things that they can control.
Okay.
And when you're informed about things that may or may not be true, but most of the time potentially untrue, about who's coming in and who's going out of your country, I think that you can, there's fear there. And I think that a big thing is to break that fear. And I think organizations like Metalkin Teams International really show a face to the ones and show a story about their impact. And they really do change minds about what, who a refugee is and who's someone that has to migrate, because it's not a choice of theirs. It's for survival. And I think people forget that if we were in that time, would we not want our neighboring countries to help? I mean, we've had natural disasters in our own places, and we get water from Mexico, and we get support from Canada. Throughout our world, throughout our history, the U.S. has helped other nations, and other nations have helped us. And so, for me, I do believe, I'm a much more optimistic and hopeful person, that we would not be viewed that way. But that's also because I don't personally view people coming into our country seeking refuge from conflict in their home countries as I want them. I think they should be welcomed. But that's my personal belief.
Well, the fear-mongering, too, is obnoxious to me. At no point does anybody want to leave their home. Like, home is where you're comfortable. Home is where your roots are and your history is and your family is, your friends. It's about your life. Your home is your life. And when you're uprooted from your home, your life suddenly changes and you have to struggle to find meaning and purpose and a direction. And then also navigate things like safety and your health and the health and safety of your family. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me to treat somebody who is forced from their home terribly.
And the thing is they are forced. If they stay, they can be risk of, you know, more endangerment. And so I think...
And it's not just endangerment from other human beings. Like, if there's a natural disaster, you have, what, no food, water? Are there, like, is there disease in stagnant water? Like, you know, there's crazy things that
There's a lot of health that concerns that come. And that's the thing is, I think, personally, that we need to address more globally. Is what are the actions taken within each hemisphere or each area, and what neighboring countries can do for each other.
So... question of the podcast. Do you want me to ask you this question,
or should ask
you? I did say that, like I was.
I mean, I guess you can.
I can ask you a different question, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, do you have one in mind? You can ask me that one.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seems so lackadaisical. You seem tired all of a sudden. Leaning over.
Am I? Yeah, I am. You know, I only had 2 cups of coffee today.
I'm only on a cup and a half.
See, and I'm tired.
Okay.
Jeez.
Ask me a question.
All right, so question of this podcast. We are talking war and conflict, so obviously it is a topic on everyone's mind all the time, especially now in this political climate. What do you think could cause World War III?
Based off all the dystopian novels.
Well, obviously a teenager is going to save us.
Definitely a teenager that's like save a cheerleader that has to save like a businessman.
Like if something. There's a ring thrown in there or like some wizardry or, you know, maybe competitive games.
Hermione could come save the day. That'd be fine.
Oh, come on. Let's do this.
I think, to be honest, I think that we're going to probably experience something through cyber. I think that...
cyber technology and cyber threats.
I do. I think, and the reason is I think that's just where we are leading towards. I mean, we are gaining more and more technology quicker and faster every single day. People rely so heavy on technology that, I mean, look what we're doing right now. I mean, the whole notion of, like, fireside chats was a radio that was mind-boggling to hear the president speak.
Yeah, he's in your house, right?
I mean, it went even crazier from when we started... seeing debates live on television and whether or not the president wore makeup or not, because you know, one wants to be more of a man than the other, but it shows that, you know, it's an interesting world that we are fastly evolving, and I don't necessarily think that we've talked so much about digital humanities and the ethics behind humanities when it comes to digital this digital world that we're going to be living in. And so I personally think that if we don't start making if we don't start making positions where we keep in mind the ethics mm-hmm. behind what we do on the online world, we're going to put ourselves in a potential security issue. Not just, not as a country necessarily, but as a person, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of just lack of privacy we unwillingly, or I guess willingly accept through a terms and conditions, because God forbid we actually just read the 340-page small font, 8
not doing it,
font,
Apple,
right?
Not doing it.
And so I think that that's the frustration thing. But if you don't sign it,
mm-hmm.
then you're missing out
mm-hmm.
on engaging in society. And
yeah.
I think we need to come up with an avenue of how to mitigate that
sure.
issue. Because how can I connect with maybe my congressman,
mm-hmm.
congresswoman? How can I connect and see what they write every day unless I don't have a Twitter or
yeah.
have an Instagram or have these social media areas if I don't have internet access,
yeah.
right? And so I think we're talking a lot about access is how we've given so much access to one another that can create conflict of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you know, evil factors play into that
yeah.
And it gets in the hands of others, I think that we're going to create a place that might be safer for some and unfortunately unsafe for others,
mm-hmm.
unbeknownst to themselves.
Yeah. Well, as you were talking, you said digital humanities mm-hmm. and ethics, and I thought, well, that's something we could talk about in the next season
yeah,
of the podcast.
When you decide that, we should sit down and chat, because one of my friends is a professor for that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Very nice. So, for me, I think it would be more of an environmental thing.
Mm.
Like, if there are, of course, we hear it all the time, that environmental disasters,
yeah.
floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, famines, they are becoming more and more dangerous and deadly than they have been in the past. And regardless of how you feel about climate change or global warming or global cooling or any environmental change, it's hard to say, no, that doesn't exist. I am a firm believer in the science behind environmental changes and
mm-hmm.
that we are facing conflict.
Yes.
So I think that when it comes to it, and there are definitely different areas of the world that are experiencing things at the same time, famines, floods, earthquakes, tsunamis, tornadoes,
mm-hmm.
these kinds of things, when we start running out of safe space that isn't like under threat or just actually
mm-hmm.
experiencing like fire season, right? What are we going to do as a people? We have to figure out how to live and where to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could end up fighting over space,
mm-hmm.
just that alone. And then things like clean water.
Right.
I
think water is going to be the new gold, right?
Yeah, I think it will be, yeah.
I think unless we start listening again to science and we
mm-hmm.
start doing that, I think that you're hitting on such a real topic that's happening right now that actually is addressing what we're talking about today,
yeah.
which is a crisis, because if you don't have food, water, and your soil so acidic that you can't actually grow anything,
mm-hmm.
why are you going to live there?
Yeah,
you're going to be moving, and we've seen conflict already due to
those
lack
factors
of those resources
mm-hmm.
for people to grow and create wealth and create to provide a place. And when you can't provide for your own family, then
yeah.
what are you going to do?
Because it's just a cycle of poverty that
mm-hmm.
is continuing
and
generation
so
over generation.
I think that groups like Medical Teams International that's helping refugees directly and creating avenues for them to better themselves and work directly when they work with governments and local governments, I think, you know, to help them relieve some of that health need
mm-hmm.
for a holistic and family approach, I think that it's really important. I think it's really important work, but it is something that you touched on, that, you know, environmental is coming and we
yeah.
have to start, we have
to face
act
it
now for
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So we'll kick it off to our interview again with Joe DiCarlo. He's a global ambassador with Medical Teams International. Here it is. All right, I'm here with Joe DiCarlo, a global ambassador with Medical Teams International. Joe, thank you so much for calling in today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Can you give us a little history about Medical Teams International and what your organization does for the community?
Yes, Medical Teams has been serving people in crisis all over the world for over 40 years. These are people who are victims and survivors of war and conflict, and we provide compassionate and loving medical care.
Okay.
I have to say, actually, that working with refugees and people in war and conflict is part of our DNA.
Yeah.
Because back in 1979, our founder, Ron Post, was watching the evening news, and he saw a piece about the killing fields on TV and how a large number of people were streaming into Thailand, and decided something must be done. And so he organized a medical team. He wasn't a doctor himself. And they served for several months in a refugee camp in Thailand. So this is part of our DNA. This is the spirit of love and action that we still have today in our mm-hmm. organization. It's a spirit of getting up and stepping up to help your neighbor, even if your neighbor is halfway around the world.
Yeah. So you talked about Thailand being the place where medical teams really got its start, but what areas are you working in currently?
Yes, we're actually working in 4 different countries and soon to be 5 different countries where we're serving refugees, people affected by war and conflict. I mean, the numbers are staggering. You know, today there are 70.8 million refugee and displaced people in our world.
Wow.
And when you think about that, that's 37,000 people per day forced to flee their homes due to conflict or persecution.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers are staggering. And what we're doing at Medical Teams is we are working in the countries where these people are fleeing to for safety in order to provide care, in order to provide medical care, and also in other treatments and trainings to keep them healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example of, you know, it's hard to picture 70.8 million people.
Yeah.
But let me introduce you to one refugee named Esther.
Mm-hmm.
In northern Uganda, I was visiting our team there, and I met a woman named Esther. Esther is from the town of Ye in South Sudan. And she told me, she said, my husband came up to me and said, the bullets are getting too close. Esther, you must pack a suitcase and go to Uganda, and I will follow after you. Esther walked for 3 days to get to the border. And when she got to the border, she saw the Somali soldiers, to the South Sudanese soldiers, and then she saw the Ugandan soldiers, and she didn't know what to do. She was frightened, and she said she cried out to God for help.
Mm-hmm.
When she crossed into Uganda, medical teams was there to provide a health screening, as we are there for every refugee to provide a health screening. We were the answer to Esther's prayer. You see, Esther was 9 months pregnant, and she walked for 3 days. And when she got to our clinic on the border, she was immediately transported to the maternity tent for treatment. So when I met Esther 2 days later, lying beside her was a beautiful little boy.
Oh, wow.
And I asked Esther, I said, Esther, you know, what is the name of your baby? And she said, you know, I'm not sure, but I think I will call him Abel because God is able.
Oh, wow.
Now, we are talking about real people with real lives, real names. And I just want to, you know, Medical Teams is an organization that knows their names.
So your organization's name, it really tells us what you do. You medical work internationally. So how vital are medical teams, medical care, and medical facilities to regions that are affected by war, political, or military conflicts, or those regions where refugees are fleeing to? How important is that medical work?
It's essential, actually, to the sustaining of life, to the idea of bringing hope and dignity back to worlds that have been destroyed. You know, we're talking about people who were living normal lives, lives like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to, moms and dads were going to work, children were going to school. They were part of their community civic organizations, whether it was a mosque or a church or mm-hmm. other community organizations. They were happy. And then due to none of their own fault, they got caught up into a conflict that they have no control over, and they were forced to leave. You know, it reminds me of a poem by a Somali, British Somali poet. The poem is entitled Home
yes.
by Warsan Shire.
I know this poem, and yes.
You know, I mean, there's two lines in it that speak to me greatly. No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. Mm-hmm. You only leave home when home won't let you stay.
Yes.
I've heard refugees say to me, we want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
A young girl said to me, I want to go back to school.
Yeah.
They don't want to go anywhere else. They want to go home, but home won't let them stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're a refugee. And if we, with medical teams there, committed to meeting the health care needs of this vulnerable population, primarily women and children, we give them the opportunity of some hope and some life. I've stood at the border in Uganda, northern Uganda, watching South Sudanese refugees come across.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen in the eyes of women primarily, you know, the anger and the fear, the despair. And then they receive the care that medical teams provides. So not only do we address the physical needs, but you begin to see a transformation. You begin to see where the anger softens and the fear subsides.
Yeah.
And hope is restored a bit, you know, and you begin to see some new life. So this is why the work of medical teams is so important and why it is essential that medical teams continue to work in these areas that are very difficult mm-hmm. and very challenging.
So what is something that you think those of us who haven't been displaced from our homes because of war or political or religious oppression, if we've not been displaced, we of course don't have the experience, but what's something you think that people like us should know about refugees who have been forced to flee?
I think it's very important to understand that they're like you and me.
Okay.
They have their families, they have their dreams for their families, their aspirations for a future for their children that have been dramatically disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what it would be like for us if we were to have to just leave our homes now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good picture of the Syrian refugee. This perspective where they left a fairly stable country, they left a healthcare system that was working, and then they were forced into Lebanon or Turkey as a refugee. They don't have their diabetes medicines. They don't have any of the medications that they normally would take, and they have no way of getting them refilled.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled with that, then, is the trauma that they've experienced from onslaughts of bombings and seeing death all around them. And then that just exacerbates the problems that they're experiencing from the physical and emotional side.
Yeah.
So they are like you and me, and they're just wanting to live a normal life, and they want that normal life to be back home.
Yeah. So we've talked on this podcast and through charity videos that the Combined Fund Drive does with organizations that work with refugees in the past. And a question that I've always, it is a little disheartening to me to hear their answers. And I kind of think you're going to say the same thing, but I'm curious about what you think regarding refugees fleeing war-torn areas. Do you think that they'll ever be able to go back home, and why or why not?
I believe that until there is a political solution, the foundations of what's required that would allow them to go home
mm-hmm.
Will not exist.
Okay.
For them to, I mean, let's take a place like Syria.
Mm-hmm.
They would need a peace arrangement, a peace agreement, a political solution that caused the war. And then they would need to start rebuilding. So it's going to take time. Who would have thought we would have been this many years?
Yeah.
Still in a political conflict in Syria, causing this largest migration of refugees. There are 6.7 million Syrian refugees in the world. And so so who would have thought it would have taken this long? But now, if there is a political solution that allows the gateway for them to return with hope and security, that is what's needed. And I don't see that happening in the short term.
Okay. And, yeah, it does seem that that is pretty much the answer for the community who's serving refugee populations, that there are so many things that are missing in their war-torn areas and no solutions in, really, the near future.
Yes. I mean, Uganda is our largest program where we are serving nearly a million refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And people in Uganda from the northern part of the border all the way down to the southern part. And most of the refugees in southwest Uganda come from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay.
That rebel fighting has been going on for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And people have waves of refugees continually coming into Uganda. And so we don't see in many of these war-torn and conflict-stricken areas, we don't see either the political will or any movement towards a peaceful resolution that would facilitate the repatriation of people back to their home countries.
So in war-torn areas and refugee settlements, how prevalent are viruses and diseases like Ebola and cholera and malaria? Do they run rampant in these within these populations?
Well, I will say yes. I will say 60 to 80% of reported deaths in the refugee camps are caused by measles,
wow,
diarrheal diseases, acute respiratory infection, and malaria. These are preventable diseases. And so this is why it isn't so vitally important that you have an organization like medical teams in place in the refugee camps with operating clinics to ensure that these diseases don't start and don't spread into an outbreak. If I could say, too, the other thing, though, that's extremely important is to ensure not only that people get healthy if they are sick, but also that they remain healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccinations and making sure that children get their vaccinations to prevent disease, that mothers during their pregnancy and birth and after their birth have the treatments and the care that they need to remain healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only refugees have access to care, but also it's got to be timely access to care. Because time is of essence. If you have an obstructed pregnancy and need to drive 2 hours on a dirt road to get to a referral hospital for care, you're going to lose probably the baby and probably the mother. So medical teams is working very closely with the local health authorities and with other international organizations in order to ensure that not only do they have care available, but it's in a timely fashion so that they can get the care that they deserve.
Yeah. So when you talk about the local health authorities, you're referring more to the health authorities in the countries that refugees have fled to, correct?
That's correct. We are partners on the ground in every possible way. It's in our names, medical teams. You know,
mm-hmm.
We see this as a team effort, and that includes not only partnering with our volunteers, partnering with local authorities to ensure that we're part of a comprehensive solution of the healthcare needs of that community.
So on your website, I was looking at a few things, and there's a map that shows some of the regions that medical teams has worked in and is currently working in, like regions in Africa and Central America and Asia. Do you think that through your work with medical teams, do you think that these regions are becoming more stable, less stable, or they're just maintaining the status quo for where they are right now?
I think that the support that we bring to these countries in which we're working helps establish greater stability and provides greater hope and access to care that otherwise wouldn't be available. You know, when people don't have hope, when they don't have the basics of life, then instability grows. And so medical teams is a really an agent of stability and hope, but not only to maintain, but also to improve. We not only work in the refugee community, but we're also working in the host community as well. And when I say that, I mean when refugees are coming into a country, they're integrated into a host community.
Yeah.
And so we don't provide just care to the refugee, but also we include the host community so that the whole body, the whole collective, has access to quality care. Otherwise, we could be starting, we could be an agent of conflict if we're just providing quality care to the refugee population.
Sure.
And ignoring the host population. So I want to believe, and I do firmly believe, that medical teams is working to not only maintain, but to improve the quality of life of the whole collective community, refugee and host.
Very nice. So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Medical Teams International. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Yes, it's interesting. I went out to coffee with a friend yesterday, and I spent $10.
Okay.
And as I was preparing for this, I was convicted because I thought, you know, $10 would have provided 45 doses of malaria medication.
Wow.
For a child suffering from malaria. $10 would provide a mosquito net for a child so to prevent them from getting malaria.
Mm-hmm.
$10 would provide the equipment that's needed to make sure that a child is checked for malnutrition. It ensures that a mother has the equipment she needs for a safe delivery of her baby. $10 doesn't seem like much to us, the cost of two cups of coffee.
Yeah.
But to them and to the world, it can change a lot. It can save a life, and it can change a life forever. So it's significant what we are able to do, even though it may seem like a little to us.
Mm-hmm. So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
Yes, I think one very significant event that people can participate in is what we call Healthy Woman, Healthy World. It's an opportunity to learn more about the needs of women and children around the world. It's usually over a luncheon, and there's usually a very engaging speaker. I recommend that you go to our website at medicalteams.org to get details, not only on that event, but also on other opportunities that we have, including an opportunity to volunteer with medical teams.
Very nice. Well, Joe, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about Medical Teams International and the work you're doing in these populations with refugees and host countries.
Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity to share and to get the message out. And I also actually want to thank all of our donors who do participate with us, who support our work. And I invite others to join us, because together we can bring health and healing and hope to a very hurting world. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That's great. That was our interview with Joe DiCarlo, Global Ambassador with Medical Teams International. I knew a little bit about Medical Teams International before, just like I said, from the Leadership Breakfast and the podcast that Philip and I did after that breakfast. And some of the stuff that we talked about then was more about the medical stuff and how to mm-hmm. help refugees
yeah.
who need the services. But this is also, like, there are, Joe mentioned, 70.8 million refugees and displaced people mm-hmm. in the world.
Wow.
70.8 million.
That's insane.
That is insane.
How many people are in the world?
We're about 7 billion.
Wow.
We're a little over that.
Yeah.
But there's no seeing that number stopping.
No.
You know, especially if things are terrible and, like, people are fighting for resources like water, like land, like food, medicine even. If they have to fight for things that are part of just basic humanity, then we're going to continue to see conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to stop.
Yeah.
So,
anything from the interview that you really enjoyed listening from Joseph?
Yeah, well, one thing that I thought, coming from somebody who's working on the ground and he's been to different parts of the world working with refugees and then people who have dealt with conflicts and also natural disasters, I had asked him, you know, what about refugees? What would you like people to know about them? And he had said, they're just like us.
Yeah.
They're exactly like us. They're just people. They have their homes, their dreams, their wants, their needs,
yeah.
and for whatever reason, those wants and dreams and needs have just been taken away.
What I think is interesting when you're saying that is it immediately popped in my head that, like, all of a sudden, once we label an individual as a refugee or as an immigrant or as whatever, blank, mm-hmm. fill in the blank, we all of a sudden take their human rights away.
Yeah, it's like
for some reason,
status.
Like the moment that you see that they're seeking asylum, that we're like, well, now we have to, we now, like, remove that human element
yeah.
from, you know, what they were.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so, you know, it's no longer when that they're from X country. It's now they're this different human. And
yeah.
I think it's unfortunate. And I think I'm glad that Joseph made that comment saying there's nothing different.
Yeah.
They are just as if you were to meet them.
Yeah. The only difference between you, me, and refugees are that we have that those wants, dreams, and needs are stripped away from them.
Yeah.
Our home is stripped away.
Yeah.
Whereas we're lucky enough to still
yeah.
have those things.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And that's definitely something that I think is important for the whole narrative about refugees. They do not want to be refugees. Mm-hmm. Flat out.
I mean, no. Why? I mean, the thing
why
is,
would you
why
want to?
Yeah.
No, nobody does.
Things, you're forced from your home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we're going to talk quick upcoming events. We just wrapped up.
Tired.
Yes, exhausted.
But
the cleaning is still underway.
We are still cleaning and scrubbing.
Yeah.
We are getting all of it out.
But we had a masquerade ball.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
The work that everybody put in was just so amazing, and I'm just so proud of our volunteers and our committee specifically.
Yes, our committee teams are fantastic.
Yeah, just really
shout out Team Know It All.
That's the logistics team.
Yeah, we're the
it's
best.
Whatever.
We're the best.
Way better.
Oh, sure.
But it is.
We
just
have
really,
more people. We'll fight you.
Yeah, we work in lean management.
Sure.
but it was just a really incredible time, and we're just so proud of the work that was done. And so thank you again to all the guests, all the sponsors, anybody that donated silent auction items. And gift baskets. We really could not put this ball on without you.
Yes.
So thank you.
Bite of L&I is coming up next week.
I'm hungry already.
Dude, I'm hungry too.
I mean, we already talked about that I was hungry,
yeah.
but now I'm like double hungry because Bite of L&I is my jam.
Yeah, and I
which you can get there. You can get jams.
You can get jams there. Well, we also missed the Ethiopian lunch at L&I this year.
Yeah.
So guess what
stupid
they
work.
Have? I know. Works in the way of everything.
Works in the way of work.
Works in the way of work. But guess what they'll have there?
The Ethiopian
yeah.
Food back, which I'm very
they
excited
will.
For.
They will,
I hope
so.
I hope he has the ability to bring coffee again.
Yeah.
Because I really do like the Ethiopian coffee.
It is really
make,
tasty
make
so highly recommend
mm-hmm.
It is definitely open to anybody, so if
yeah.
you're not a state employee, guess what,
yep.
go to L&I headquarters, 7273 Linderson.
That's weird that you knew that off the
yeah,
top of your head.
I know.
But and the
like
last thing for some of our upcoming events is on December 3rd during what we call our last week to give, which you can continue to keep giving, it's just for us to wrap up the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We have this cool thing which everybody's pretty much heard of called Giving Tuesday, but the CFD does a special day that day to really promote charitable giving and do some cool little e-cards for that day. More details will come, so stay tuned on give.wa.gov, and you'll find out more information and details for that day.
Yes. So thanks again to Joe DiCarlo, talking about Medical Teams International and the work they do all around the world. And hey, thank you for being on the podcast, and I am excited to go eat.
Happy, me too.
Yay.